This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is the Vic Police Glow Show, exclusive to Joy Podcast, presented by Vic Police LGBTI liaison officers and a range of Joy presenters. Now, here is the Glow Show.
Welcome back to the Glow Show. I'm Will Anting. I'm a presenter from Worldwide Wave, and today I'm having the honour of holding the Glow Show again, and I am joined by leading senior constable Gabby Tayac. Today we're talking about Highway Patrol, and would you be able to introduce our guest who we have in today?
Yeah, from one of our Highway Patrol units is leading senior constable Beck Lawther.
Beck, welcome.
Good afternoon.
And also known as our drill sergeant, but for a Pride March, but you'll have to hear about that in another podcast.
Another episode, yes.
Well, she's famous.
Multi-talented.
But she's here because we're coming into the holiday season,
yep.
Which is a time where our road toll, unfortunately, tends to increase. People are more at risk at being in fatalities, being in serious motor vehicle accidents or collisions, not accidents. So Beck is in here because we want to get a message out to make sure that everyone does everything they can to remain safe over this holiday period.
Yeah. Now, Beck, just a little bit about yourself. How long have you been with the Victorian Police Force, and how did you find your way into the Highway Patrol unit?
Well, I'm just tipping into my 15th year.
Wow.
I know, doesn't look like it. But yes, 15 years. I've been in Highway Patrol for 10 years. I fell into Highway Patrol when I was working in Ararat, actually. I did a little country stint up there, and they offered me some temp duties working Highway Patrol. Basically gave me the best car in the fleet, was able to work by myself and drive wherever I wanted.
Now, without turning this into a car show, mm-hmm. what sort of car did you have?
Oh, at the time, we're going back a little while.
Yeah.
At the time, it was a VZ, Holden VZ Series 2.
Wow, yep.
I think our unmarked car was purple,
right?
Which is a little bit fun.
Indeed.
And here they gave me this constable, who had only just really fallen out of the academy a couple of years earlier, all of the equipment and all of the everything and the freedom to do whatever I wanted, and I fell in love with it immediately. It was great fun.
I do remember the VL series, the Turbo 6 Interceptor.
Yes.
Commodores, and they were a wonderful vehicle.
Indeed, indeed. We're very passionate about our cars at Highway Patrol.
Yeah, actually, now while we're on the cars, still, I believe that the Highway Patrol Department has put out a tender for a replacement because we are seeing Holden leave the Australian scene.
Yeah, so next year we'll be moving to BMWs.
Okay.
BMW 5 Series, yeah.
See, I know nothing about cars, but I know BMW is quite impressive.
A bit European gets Gabby excited.
Apparently.
So, yes, a European car. So BMW do a police fit out already.
Yes.
So that's probably what was most attractive to the department, because they know what they're doing already, so it's sort of less work for us. They come off the factory just about ready to go as a police vehicle.
Okay, so the fitting out's quite minor, so
yeah.
It's just your technology,
so we just
information
do our own
technology.
Tech, yep. And obviously our decals and spam bars and all that sort of thing. But BMW,
what's a spam bar?
That's where the blue and red lights are, Gabs.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's a lot
maybe
of people.
I'll take you for a spin one day. Are you actually a cop? Okay.
I'm a glow, Beck.
Oh,
I'm a glow.
Of course, yes.
That's going to be really
important.
Weird, though, looking out and seeing all the police cars on the street not being Holden's.
Yeah,
it will.
Because they've always been.
Yeah, so we're about 80% Holden's, 20% Fords on Highway Patrol, so you don't see that many Fords around. But yeah, when we move to BMWs, it's going to be...
it's going to be a big change.
Well, you know.
Have you had a go of the BMW?
No, not yet. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
That's quite fascinating because the traditional Ford and Holden's were 5-litre car...
Yeah, that's right.
...petrol cars.
Yeah, that's right.
And these are 3-litre diesels.
Turbo diesels,
yeah.
Yes. We have enough torque to spin the earth a little bit quicker. So I think...
All right, people, I'm going to have to change the topic here because everyone's getting a little bit too excited about cars.
Car show here.
Can I talk about my 73 Buick Riviera for a minute? No.
Yes, please do.
We couldn't resist the opportunity.
Yeah, of course.
But look, you do great work out on the road. Mind you, there's probably a few people out there who think, God, I'm worth a speeding ticket, or probably don't think you do the greatest work in the world. But look, one of the big issues that Gabby raised is fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
What's some of the understandings that we have with that.
The one thing we need to remember is driving is almost like a sport. Mm-hmm. And in some facets, it is a sport. But it requires all of those things that you need in order to, your motor control, you need to be alert and all of those sort of things. And there's certain aspects, especially at this time of the year, that we may forget have a certain impact on how we drive. And so the stress of having to go from one family lunch to another family afternoon lunch to a dinner to shopping to getting the kids ready and all that sort of thing does have quite an impact on our bodies, yeah. physiologically speaking. And so when it comes to sitting in the car where we're quite sedentary and we're relaxed and our autopilot goes on and all of a sudden those stresses of the day start wearing in, we've got the music on and then the kids are falling asleep in the back because you're driving up to Bendigo to see your other folks, and then things start getting a little bit weary and there's nothing to look at and you find yourself sort of nodding off. And it's not necessarily just country driving, it happens in the city all the time. And yeah. it might be just that momentary lapse of concentration that you've missed the pedestrian lights, or you're looking at the lights further down the road and you're missing the lights in front of you and they're showing green but these ones are showing red, and then all of a sudden you've gone through a red light. And it happens all the time in the city. It's, you know, a big issue. And also rear end collisions, just not paying enough attention at what's going on in front because we're fatigued and we've got a little bit of tunnel vision about what's going on. So I think it's just important that we appreciate that this time of the year is tiring.
Mm-hmm. A lot of
it
demands on
stressful.
Family.
Yep. Businesses are closing up and everybody wants everything done before Christmas.
Yeah.
And we're not really appreciating that sort of physiological effect it may be having on our bodies, and then trying to then control a motor vehicle when you're under that sort of stress could be potentially harmful things. I think it's about being a little bit more self-aware, making sure you're getting good sleep, making sure that you're recognising the signs of fatigue while you're driving. We're not here to, you know, blow smoke.
Of
Everybody
course.
Knows you have to be responsible.
But, Beck, I mean, most people would be aware of drink and drug driving now. Uh-huh. It doesn't mean they're not doing it, but they're aware of it at least. And most people are thinking about, oh, if I'm drinking, I shouldn't be driving. But people don't tend to be thinking about, I'm tired,
no,
should I be driving?
Right. And I think it's that protracted period of time as well. So how has your last 10 days been? Oh, I've averaged about 4 hours sleep. Eventually, that's going to build up, especially if you're a shift worker, and I can certainly relate.
Yeah.
But if over that, you know, a period of time, if you really are under your average sleep requirements, and then you're asking your brain to concentrate on a multitude of different things, as you know, that are happening while you're driving, outside and inside of the car, it only takes that momentarily lapse of concentration for something devastating to happen, and then Christmas is ruined.
Exactly. And it's a good thing you said too, because when people think of fatigue, they're focused on the advertising campaign, which is very much a country-based, you know, long driving. But mm-hmm. you're dead right. We tend to forget about the demands of, you know, having done shift work. We get yep. tired. We're going from event to event. And city driving can be more demanding at times.
Absolutely.
Your concentration is required more, and yeah, fatigue can...
There's so many things happening outside the car when you're in the city. You've got cyclists, pedestrians, motorcyclists, trams. Everybody's in their own world. And so we can't just make the assumption that everybody around us is going to do the right thing. And so that can be the other thing, is that if somebody else is going to do the right thing, us being able to react appropriately to avoid the collision, not to say that it's your fault, but being able to recognise that something's gone wrong and prevent that collision.
And that leads to, I guess, distracted driving.
Absolutely.
Because
yeah.
apart from that, then there's everything else that's happening around us, the phone calls, the texts coming through, the kids screaming.
Exactly.
You want to change the channel on the radio.
Exactly.
100 things are going on. You're thinking about where you want to be next, what's lined up for dinner, what you've got to pick up at the shop. And so there's so
demand.
Many things that you've got to concentrate on. And distracted driving is one of, if not more dangerous than drink driving.
Yeah, and I think that's an excellent point. And I'm not just talking about mobile phones. I mean, obviously, in this day and age, they are a massive distraction, but it's a whole heap of stuff. People are trying to multitask. And I understand that we live in a very stressful world at the moment. And so we're trying to do as many things as we can to be more efficient. And it's hurting us, literally. It's causing collisions. So you're trying to get paperwork done while you're sitting in the car. You're trying to eat breakfast or whatever. I'll just do that and put makeup on. Just focus on driving.
Don't be watching a movie.
I can't tell you how many
I've
people
seen people
I've seen.
Doing that.
They
you
watch
walk past
movies.
They're watching a movie,
reading the paper, reading a book.
I do have trouble putting makeup on when I'm driving.
Right. You know what? It's eye makeup. Let's talk about that for a sec. If you're putting eye makeup on while you're driving,
I have trouble
where
with my foundation
looking?
While I'm driving, so forget eye makeup. Now, we are entering that time of the year, which we mentioned, the festive season. So, once again, people are prone to drink driving.
Mm-hmm.
How much of a problem has it been this year? Are we finding improvements?
This message is not a new message.
Yeah.
I'm not here to lecture people on not drink driving. We all know that you're not supposed to drink drive. I think the biggest miscalculation, and especially with end of year work functions, which is a big thing, is probably the next day. So they finish work at 5, have a few wines, which turns into a few everything else. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. They go to sleep for 4 hours. They wake up and drive without thinking that their body hasn't quite processed everything yet. So that's a little bit of an issue. With all of these different transportations that we have available now in the city, 24-hour public transport, we've got Uber, we've got taxis, all of these options. The point is there's options there.
Yeah.
So a little bit of forward planning.
Which is the key thing, planning.
Which is the key thing. Yeah. I get that people get caught up in the let's just have another drink. That's life. That's what happens. We're social creatures. I get it. But a little bit of forward planning and no laziness, which is probably the part that irritates me the most, is they just want to get their car home.
Yeah.
And they're not thinking about the repercussions of what could happen.
Yeah, they may not get their car home or themselves or someone else's family.
Exactly. And it's like, I think it's just like a little Uber fee or a taxi fee or
a little pre-planning.
A little pre-planning can prevent all of this from happening. You can still have a good time. And then, sure, you have to go pick your car up the next day. It's not a big deal. It's better than having a collision and then losing your license and everything else that's associated now with drink driving, which is quite a convoluted process in order to get it back. So if you don't want to talk about the safety aspects, of course we all know the safety issues, think about how much of an interruption it's going to be for you to be unlicensed and then having to get an interlock and then going to the courts and saying, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't drink anymore and, you know, I'm trying to be a good person, and then you can't get your kids to school and then, you know, your partner gets upset at you because they've got to do all the driving around. And
it's an excellent point you make, because it's something that I find hard to believe that people don't realise until they get caught.
Mm.
You know, they just think, oh, it's a fine, it's a loss of licence, but it can include interlocks.
And that's exactly right.
And the especially court process.
Especially now. Yeah, especially now, the interlock requirements or the condition that's imposed on people now is so much lower in relation to the reading. So even low-range alcohol readings will now require an interlock.
So before we go further, can we talk about what are the ranges? So low, medium and high. And what generally is the penalties for a low reading and what's the general
right, so
the high and medium?
We talk very vaguely low, medium, high. That it's not a legislative thing. It's more just how we would speak and if we were just relaying how severe the offending is.
Yes.
So obviously 0.05 is the minimum.
Yep.
If it's your first offence, that's an infringement notice and it also carries 10 demerit points. If you're over 26, if you're under 26, it's 6 months off the road. And then as it goes up by point, so up to 0.069, so 0.05 to 069 is an infringement notice. And then after that is mandatory loss of license, so 6 months. 07 up, 7, 08, 8 months, and so on and so forth. Hmm. 0.1, we impound your car.
Wow.
And obviously the higher up, the more severe. We also do drug testing after a breath test. So if you get tested for drugs and it's positive and it's a combination of alcohol drugs, then we're in a world of strife. It's off to court.
And things get more complicated.
And penalties get a lot more severe. So, and those interlock conditions for drink drivers are imposed for a minimum of 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the 6 months, we get a printout because we want to see that it's zero.
Yeah.
So it's either Vic Road managed or the court managed, depending on the severity of the offending. And then if there's some readings in there, then the magistrate will say, no, you have to keep it on for longer. And that means that the only car you can drive is one that's fitted with an interlock. And there's costs associated with maintaining that.
Exactly. You took my thunder again. I was just going to say, remind everybody the costs of these things.
Yeah,
it's not a free service.
No, it's expensive. You've got installation and then maintenance fees.
Yep.
That is literally the only car you can drive. So if that needs servicing, it has to have special servicing done so that nothing's interfered with in relation to the interlock. It's a very sensitive instrument. So there's... you can't blow into it unless you've not had anything to eat or drink for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And if you've got any readings in there and you can't explain them, then you're going to have it on for longer. That's going to cost you more money. So
it's these an are excellent the long, deterrent.
It is a long-term consequences of being a little bit lazy on a Friday night and wanting to have a couple of extra drinks.
Mm.
But I don't think people really look at it as a deterrent because they're still going out and drink driving.
Yeah.
Because the numbers are still huge.
The numbers are... yeah, the numbers are big.
You look at the numbers over every weekend and you just think, and the people that have been caught drink driving out of the ones that have been tested, and you just think people aren't learning.
Yeah. I think the positive thing is that, especially since I've been in the job, that shift of attitude with the public in relation to it being a bad thing to do. So if we were all having a drink together and I was going to drive and you would say, you can't drive, you've had too much to drink. And if I did, then I'd be an idiot. Do you know what I mean? Like that sort of the social aspect of it has shifted quite significantly.
As a young fella, I actually enjoyed a drink, believe it or not. And I was actually more terrified of having to go back to the judge and beg for my license once I found out that that was a realistic process.
Yeah.
And I just made a simple rule. It was either you go out and have a drink, and when you do that, it's no car, or you don't drink. Yep. And you take a car and you just make it an either or, and that's your pre-planning.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing is that there is no real hard, fast calculation to work out what your eating is.
But keep it simple.
It is going to be dependent on how your liver works, what your immune system's like, and how your body specifically processes alcohol. So we give the formula of for a man, 2 drinks in the first hour and then 1 drink every hour after that.
Yeah.
And for a woman, 1 drink in the first hour and one every hour after that. But we're talking about standard drinks. So we're talking about much smaller than you would expect.
I was just going to ask that. So what is a standard drink and what is generally then actually served to people? Because I imagine people will go, oh, well, I've had 3 drinks, so I'll be right.
Yeah.
But that's probably 6 drinks or
something. Well, let's just talk about red wine. Each red wine is a different alcohol content, but the glasses that they serve at restaurants that have the line on them remains the same. So you could have a glass of Shiraz at 9% and then have a glass of Pinot at 12%, or for example, and they're both served in a standard glass, but they're not. So therefore, the calculation is impossible to work out. So my advice is exactly that, what you were saying before. If you're going to have a drink, don't drive at all.
Yeah, pre-plan.
Absolutely pre-plan, because you can't.
We are human beings.
Yeah.
The calculations are impossible.
Exactly. And what you drink today and your reading today, and then you drink the same thing tomorrow, you might have a different reading tomorrow, depending on how your body is, how much sleep you've had, how much you've eaten, how your body's feeling, what your immune system's like, all of these things, all mitigating situations.
And just finally with drink driving, something to remind people of, and I know people who have been caught that they have done my golden rule.
Mm-hmm.
They've gone out, had a great night out. They've left their car at a friend's place.
Mm.
They've woken up in the morning. They've jumped in their car to bring it home after a good night's sleep, thinking they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
A random breath test or a random pullover, and bang, they're 0.07, 0.08.
Yeah.
Very realistic thing. And
absolutely.
Is this common?
Very. And very common with probationary drivers who know that they can't drink at all.
And it does seem hard. They've done the right thing.
They're trying to do the right thing, yeah. So
look, we need to be aware.
At the end of the day, it is an hour for a standard drink to be processed. So for it to go through your body and go through your bloodstream and for you to process it and for that poison, which is what alcohol is, to be gone. So if you say, I had 12 beers last night, well, you need 12 hours. So on the back of the bottle, you just got 1.2 standard drinks. And I look at it all the time. And it's a lot of mid-strength, crafty beers are sort of mid-strength now, 1.1 standard drinks. That's going to take an hour to get out of my system. So if I'm lining the bottles up, and I don't do this. This is just an example. Maybe I do. And I've had 10 beers, and it's 10 hours for that alcohol to dissipate from my
body.
But
if they're 1.1 or 1.2, then that's even longer.
You've got to add a little bit more.
That'd be another hour or so.
Sleep does not cure anything. Not drinking cures everything.
So look after yourself, but look after your mates as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, communication and
really, you can't. That whole attitude of it will never happen to me. It will happen to you, or it will happen to somebody you know, and it will absolutely turn your world upside down. And obviously, with my job, I deal with that quite a lot.
And if it doesn't turn your world upside down, it might be because you're gone, and it's everyone else's world that's upside down,
and you're left everything behind for everybody else to pick up.
Now, roughly on drink driving, and it's something that's least spoken about because the public. There's plenty of advertising, and over the decades there's been plenty of marketing and news regarding drink driving, but drug driving seems to be coming up a little bit more now. So,
drug driving, if I'm honest with you, is our biggest issue.
Wow.
And I will give you my personal stats as far as what I experience out on the road. I will get at least one drug driver a shift, if not 4. I will get one drink driver a fortnight.
Wow.
So,
I don't
test every person for drug driving. We are a little bit limited with how many drug tests that we can do. But that's how rife it is. It's absolutely, positively out of control.
And is there any particular drug that gets picked up more often than others?
So we test for methamphetamine, MDMA and cannabis.
Okay.
Methamphetamine is the most common. It also stays in your system for the longest, which is probably why it's probably a little bit more common.
When you say it stays in the longest, what sort of periods? And in comparison to, say, alcohol.
Right, yeah. So it's a little bit hard because when you buy your meth, it doesn't say 1.2 standard drinks on it.
Yeah.
But as far as I know. The issue, obviously, with methamphetamine is it's not a natural substance, obviously, so the body takes a while to process it. And although you may not feel the effects, I've had people test positive after using methamphetamine on the weekend, so say on a Saturday night, and they've tested positive on the Wednesday.
So where would they stand legally? I mean, they've tested positive on, I assume it's a lick.
Yeah, so it's...
goes into a chemist and is further analysed. Is he still legally outside the law?
Yes, yeah.
So you've had a good dose of cannabis on a Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And come Wednesday or Thursday, you could still be in a world of pain.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
And I think this is the biggest thing that people don't realise,
yeah,
is that I'm not here to lecture about using or not using drugs. Obviously, I'm going to say don't use drugs, but people are going to use them and they do use them, and it might be party pills on the weekend or cannabis, but it's more about being able to make a calculated decision about what's happening. So if you take methamphetamine or MDMA, ecstasy on Saturday night, it will still be on your system on Monday morning when you're on your way to work. And a lot of people don't realise that. They may not be doing this maliciously, but they just don't understand.
Yeah.
That your body does take a long time to process these drugs. They're not natural substances. Your body doesn't... It's a poison and your body needs to get rid of it. And it's a lot harder than alcohol, for example. So Monday morning is when I get most of my drug drivers on their way to work, not realising that the party pills they took on the weekend are still in their system. And that's not to say that they are overtly impaired and they're still high,
for
example.
It's not the same nature as alcohol is what you're trying to say.
No, and the way that we test roadside using a preliminary oral fluid test is for testing for the presence of that drug, not necessarily that they are impaired by that drug. If somebody is clearly impaired, then we take them back to the police station. We do like a sobriety test and then we take blood. And that blood test will test for over 600 different drugs and poisons, including prescription medication. So the roadside stuff is more screening for the presence of that drug in the person's system, which can still impair their driving, but may not be impaired themselves. Not sure if that's clear, but there's two. If somebody is clearly drug affected, they're coming back to the police station for a blood test.
Yeah.
If they have used the drug on the weekend and we're screening for that drug, it's still in their system, which means that they still won't have proper control, but not necessarily overtly impaired.
It mind boggles me that people take drugs to begin with. And I mean, this just to me reaffirms that it's insane. You know?
It is.
And if you want to live a normal life and have a career and get on and function from day to day, I mean, yeah, it's so interesting to know that, as you say.
I don't think anyone would, very few people would know this.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing, is it just about educating. And I know that with a few people that I've dealt with, I always ask them questions about how long they've been using for and why they were using them, just as general conversation and because I'm interested. But a lot will take the Monday off work, understanding that they might still have it in their system, go to work on Tuesday. They've still got it in their system on Tuesday. And of course, it's not like alcohol. You can't pick it up and see exactly what's in it and then make a calculated decision. Each time you use, you're using something different and you're using a different strength and a different potency. And
it's not regulated.
You don't actually know what's in it. You don't know what's in it. And I personally could never take anything. I didn't know what was in it. It seems rather dangerous, but it's the driving component of it. So many people involved in collisions, and we do a breath test, they're fine. They do a drug test and they have no idea that it's still in their system. And it is absolutely rife. I can't tell you.
That's disappointing to hear. Look, it's a fact of life. And I imagine, you know, marketing and education will eventually get out there in the future. Certainly with those statistics and those numbers, you know, I would imagine that to be the case. But it is startling to me.
It is, yeah. And I think it's about educating people on trying to make the right decision. If you're going to take drugs, then, you're going to take drugs. But at least these people that want to do the right thing and don't necessarily want a drug drive, they have no information to go by. So ecstasy and methamphetamine, I'm saying don't drive for 5 days.
Wow.
That's what I say. Cannabis is a little bit less. I would say probably 3 days, but to guarantee it's not in your system. But it also depends on how often you use and the potency of what you've used. But nobody's really going to take ecstasy on Saturday and then have to have the whole week off work.
Exactly.
Are they?
No.
It could be an excuse.
Maybe.
Now, the new phenomenon our mobile phones, distracted driving. Mm-hmm. Is this continuing to be a problem? Oh, or are people getting better?
Have you been reading the paper?
It is such a problem. In fact, people are getting quite sneaky with it now. It's not so much holding the phone up to your ear and having a conversation, but it might be just quickly checking Facebook or Instagram with the phone under the steering wheel while you're driving along. And it's quite obvious to me while I'm working because you're driving looking down. Must be something amazing in your crutch that you're looking at or you're on your phone.
So without giving any secrets away, I mean, how do you detect?
Oh, I just get out of the car and walk up to the driver's side window.
Because they're so distracted.
They're so distracted they don't see me. I'm wearing high vis and I've got a very shiny car and that I can literally drive up next to them, get out of the driver's seat, walk over to the driver's window, knock on the window and still frighten them.
That's really, really disturbing.
Hate, right? And I would hate to say that's very enjoyable, but it is a little bit enjoyable. get a little bit frightened.
Exactly.
But yes, that's how much of tunnel vision they're in. And a lot of people get a bit flustered because it's heavy traffic.
Yeah.
And there's no harm, heavy traffic. But I did go to a collision not long ago where an elderly gentleman fell over in Swanston Street, just at Flinders Street, fell over in front of a stationary car at a red light. And she was on the phone. She looked up and lighted turned green and she just ran over the top of them.
Oh my goodness.
If you're looking down, you're not looking at what's going on in front of you. So this is not, it's all good and well to say, oh, okay, heavy traffic, but people, then people feel, you know, they get a beep from behind because they haven't moved off in time or they miss the green light.
You know, it's brilliant you mentioned that because, look, I may know somebody
who, friend of a friend.
Who drives a car.
I'm asking for a friend.
Yeah, and once again, you're in traffic, you're late. Your radio program or work or something's happening and you put your park brake on and what harm can
Where's
it do?
Harm?
Exactly.
There could be a puppy there, Will.
Oh, God, don't. Now I'm really
don't
never going to do
the
it.
Puppy, Will.
And yeah, but look, that does highlight you are distracted. Mm-hmm. Something can happen in front of you that you do not see. It could be a child.
Mm, exactly. You know, and children have no peripheral vision, which is why we have 40K school zones. They've got no peripheral vision. The responsibility is on you to ensure that just because the light's green doesn't mean you can go. You don't know what's happened in front of you. You may be able to see it, you may not be able to see it. But if you're too busy checking your Instagram, which I'm sure is an amazing account, then you're missing what's going on. And nobody's saying that you're doing this maliciously. Nobody says you want to run over somebody. But there is no such thing as an accident. They're all collisions. There's a cause. And it's either the driver, the environment, or the vehicle. And 95% of the collisions I go to are the driver.
Wow, that's incredible.
So I think it's just, we just need to take a little bit of time to slow down, a little bit of self-awareness. Take a little bit of responsibility.
Do you think technology will be forced to come in where phones will be deactivated once a car is initiated?
Oh, I've no doubt that they will have to.
Yeah. So the problem is so prevalent.
Yeah. We've got a lot of technology that's helping us as well as far as, you know, the automated systems in vehicles, emergency braking assist, all those sort of things. And they're all designed because people can't concentrate. You know, auto brake assist, less than 30 k's an hour so you don't run up the back of somebody. That's something you should be able to do on your own.
Mm.
You shouldn't need technology for that. But they've designed it and it saves collisions all the time. So we will get to that point.
So certainly with phones, the golden rule, and this is what I do, believe it or not, pack it away. Mm-hmm. I plug it in. I use the opportunity to drive and charge my phone and I put it in the glove box and hide it and I put on silent. Absolutely. I just think that's a golden rule.
You know what? It's actually probably really good for you just to have that time without that technology just for 5 minutes.
Like, and it's also not only the phone, but it's what we talked about before. But there's people, they do their makeup.
They do everything. Just take an extra 5 minutes.
Exactly.
Now, Beck, just wondering, is it like the TV show?
Highway Patrol.
I better tell you what the TV show is. Not X-Files.
What TV show, Gabby? Yes, it is. There's probably a little bit more swearing.
Okay.
Because I do a little bit more swearing. That's probably why I'm not on the show. but it is, obviously Highway Patrol is edited down so that there's all the exciting moments in 28 minutes with plus ads. But yes, that is pretty much what I do and it's great. And there's always something new and something fun to deal with and there's also some awfulness. But in general, it's a pretty good job.
Now, Gabby, how does the GLOWS fit into the Highway Patrol Department? It's like us gays, we're not bad drivers or anything. We need special attention or anything like that.
Well, Becca, are you a GLOW?
I'm not a GLOW, actually.
How is that possible?
No, I'm like a GLOW without a GLOW. I'm a GLOW without the badge.
Okay, well, yeah. You can have
but
a badge.
The badge is like the best beer.
Yeah. I know.
They're really cool
Where's
badges.
My badge? That's all I'm just saying.
Well, the glow fits in because everything that can happen to anyone in the LGBTI community can also happen to the broader community. So it applies to everybody. So the drink driving, the drug driving, distracted driving message is for all of our society and all of the community to be aware of and really take notice of, especially now leading into the holidays. We want everyone to be safe.
No, that's excellent. Beck, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I say this to all the departments. You do all do amazing work. You need to be proud of the work that you do. And I imagine Highway Patrol is very challenging at times. You have your fun moments, I imagine, but you also have your challenging moments. And we all really appreciate the work you do.
So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, leading senior constable Beck, Lorna. And Dani, thank you for joining us today.
Pleasure.
And we'll be seeing you again
Absolutely.
In coming episodes. And dear Gabby, pleasure having you back again, yes. Looking after us and
keep safe.
Yes. That was The Glow Show. Be sure to download any episode of The Glow Show from the Joy website and also be sure to listen in at Joy949. Thanks. This is Will signing off and look forward to seeing you next time. Good luck.
You've been listening to The Vic Police Glow Show, exclusive to Joy Podcast, presented by Vic Police LGBTI liaison officers and a range of Joy presenters. Head to joy.org.au/The Glow Show to find more episodes or search Joy 94.9 Glow Show on iTunes. Subscribe so you never miss an episode. Rate and review if you like what you hear.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.